WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is dedicated to bringing you the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Friday, July 7th. My able colleague Paul Dragoo is on vacation the rest of this week, and I'm your substitute host, Steve Bonta. For today's show, we're going to do something a little different. Instead of looking at today's headlines, we're going to take a long look back and show you a few examples of how the John Birch Society and its affiliate, The New American, have predicted with amazing accuracy America's political, economic, and moral decline. This decline, we warned, was by design, not happenstance, and has led to the America we live in today, the America we read about in today's headlines. What are we talking about? Well, the best way to answer that question is to show you some of the predictions themselves. And we're going to start with a clip from a speech John Birch Society founder Robert Welch gave in Los Angeles in March of 1974. That was almost 50 years ago. He used the occasion to quote predictions he had made at the founding meeting of the John Birch Society more than 15 years earlier in December of 1958. Let's watch.
Here are the aims for the United States. One, greatly expanded government spending for every conceivable means of getting rid of ever larger sums of American money as wastefully as possible. Two, higher and then much higher taxes. Three, an increasingly unbalanced budget despite the higher taxes. Four, wild inflation of our currency. Five, government controls of prices, wages, and materials, supposedly to combat inflation. Six, greatly increased socialistic controls over every operation of our economy and every activity of our daily lives. This is to be accompanied, naturally and automatically, by a correspondingly huge increase in the size of our bureaucracy and in both the cost and reach of our domestic government. Seven, far more centralization of power in Washington and the practical elimination of our state lines. There is a many-faceted drive at work to have our state lines eventually mean no more within the nation than our county lines do now within the states. Eight, the steady advance of federal aid to and control over our educational system, leading to complete federalization of our public education. Nine, a constant hammering into the American consciousness of the horror of modern warfare, the beauties and the absolute necessity of peace, peace always on communist terms, of course. And 10, the consequent willingness of the American people to allow the steps of appeasement by our government, which amount to a piecemeal surrender of the rest of the free world and of the United States itself.
Well, talk about calling the shots. Those words pretty much describe what's happening today, don't they? In addition to warning about the big government threat, Robert Welch also warned about the world government threat at the John Birch Society's founding meeting. He said that part of the plan was to, quote, induce the gradual surrender of American sovereignty piece by piece and step by step to various international organizations, of which the United Nations is the outstanding, but far from the only example, unquote. And he also warned, quote, internationalism, as it is conceived and promoted today, is an attempt to impose more government and a more centralized one world government on all of us everywhere, unquote. Well, that's exactly what we see unfolding in today's news stories. At least we should see it if we actually look. How was Welch able to so accurately forecast the gathering storm clouds that now so greatly threaten our nation and our way of life? Of course, Welch was not a prophet, but he had done his homework. He had studied the past and carefully observed the present, and his studies and observations, along with his willingness to face unpleasant realities, made him adept at projecting the lines. That's a phrase he coined. They also enabled him to identify an organized plan to submerge our great nation of freedom and prosperity into a socialist, communist, world government nightmare. We could cite many other accurate predictions from the founder of the John Birch Society, but now let's fast forward to more recent years to take a look at how well the New American magazine's own warnings and predictions have held up against the test of time. Okay, so in our June 2nd, 1986 cover story on the immigration invasion, so now that's 1986, mind you, almost 40 years ago, we warned that without a change in policy, the flow of illegal immigration into the United States would grow. We also pointed out, quote, in Mexico and the Central American countries alone, there are more than 100 million people. And as the political and economic structures of those nations continue to deteriorate due to socialist policies, a sizable percentage of that population can be expected to arrive at our doorstep. South America, Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and Europe will contribute legions more. Unquote. Here's another one. In our October 8, 1990 cover story about our dangerous dependence on foreign sources for our energy needs, we noted, quote, if recoverable techniques improve, then deposits now deemed unrecoverable will become recoverable. Should extraction of a significant portion of this unconventional oil become economical, America's oil resources would increase dramatically, unquote. Now, that's exactly what happened with the development of fracking. And during the Trump administration, America managed to achieve energy independence for the first time since 1957. Okay, here's another example. In our October 4th, 1993 article, 30 years ago, an article entitled Shackling Planet Earth, we warned that a then little-known United Nations treaty, Agenda 21, was a, quote, massive global plan for regulating the entire planet, unquote, under the guise of achieving sustainable development and protecting the environment. In Agenda 21, we noted, quote, the UN Earth Saviors have set forth a truly frightening master plan for global population growth, healthcare, land use planning, hazardous waste, pesticides, ozone depletion, food production distribution, energy production, transportation, homeless shelters, drought relief, species protection, biotechnology, and regulations to protect forests, mountains, deserts, wetlands, oceans, rivers, streams, lakes, coastal waters, etc., ad nauseum, unquote. Of course, more recently, the overall Agenda 21 plan is being advanced under Agenda 2030, which we have covered amply in the New American magazine. And the subversive scheme to shackle the planet in the name of saving it is now much more widely known. A current manifestation of this authoritarian environmental lunacy is the push to violate property rights to make way for carbon capture pipelines based on the unscientific claim that CO2, the gas of life, is threatening global environmental devastation. And that's just one of many examples. Here's another example of our predictive power. In our April 4th, 1994 Tour de Police State special issue, we stated, quote, using a national epidemic of crime and violence as their justification, media pundits and collectivist politicians are aggressively campaigning to disarm private citizens and strengthen federal law enforcement powers, unquote. We also cautioned, quote, if the American people ever allow themselves to be disarmed and their independent police departments to become appendages of the growing federal leviathan, then the central government in Washington will possess unchecked power and America will become, by definition, a police state, unquote. Here's another example. In our June 8, 1998 issue on the politics of perversion, we warned, quote, tolerant citizens who think that, hey, I'm not gay, but they're not harming me, have a rude awakening coming. Undoubtedly, many such tolerant citizens have been rudely awakened since those words were written in 1998. We are now increasingly being harmed by the militant LGBTQ indoctrination that passes for education in our public schools and is also being pushed on us through Hollywood, entertainment, and the media. And in our May 19th, 2003 issue, 20 years ago, about our then recent military invasion of Iraq, we stated, quote, our military victory has left our nation saddled with the prospect of a long, bloody, expensive occupation and an escalating terrorist threat, unquote. Our military intervention in Iraq continued for many years after those words were written, and the Middle East terror threat has by no means abated. Here's another one. In our February 4th, 2019 issue on the public schools, we asked, quote, would you send your child into a building knowing that it was on fire? Of course not. But many parents are unaware that government schools are indeed on fire, figuratively speaking, unquote. Of course, many more parents have become aware just in the last several years. And here is just one more example. In our August 10th, 2020 issue, a little under 4 years ago, Directing the Disorder, we observe the following, quote, "The nationalist versus globalist conflict is not merely an ideological struggle between shadowy, unidentifiable forces. It is a struggle with organized globalists who have very real, identifiable, powerful organizations and networks operating incessantly to undermine and subvert our constitutional republic and our Christian-style civilization," unquote. Of course, the New American and its John Birch Society parent were warning about this cabal, now often referred to as the deep state, long before 2020. But over time, it has become far more obvious. And to use a now popular expression employed by freedom activists, growing numbers of Americans are being red-pilled. Well, we're now going to go on a brief commercial break, but stay tuned because when we come back, we will be joined by John Birch Society CEO Bill Hahn and New American Editor-in-Chief Gary Benoit for a lively discussion about our past predictions. Are such predictions inevitable? Can America be saved? And what must be done to accomplish this rescue mission? You'll not want to miss this.
Freedom is the cure.
You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom. Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Bonta, the filling in for Paul Dragoo, and with me now are Gary Benoit, the editor of the New American Magazine, and Bill Hahn, in the end, who is the CEO of the John Birch Society. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we talked about in that pretty long previous segment. It may seem to some of our viewers that we're being a little self-serving by saying, look at all the things we predicted, and they've come to pass. And I mean, what's the point of even discussing this? Well, I just wanted to add, and then in the crosstalk while we were on the break, you know, there are a number of other examples we could have given. For example, in, I believe, about 1998, we put Osama bin Laden, the leader of the Al-Qaeda group that carried out the 9/11 terrorists, on the front page of the New American, and with the caption, "Is this the face of terror?" 3 years before the 9/11 attacks. And we've had many other examples like that since that time. Most recently, you know, we started about 4 or 5 months ago talking about this carbon capture pipeline stuff. And no one else was paying any attention to it. But we started reporting on it in the show. We had it, we published articles on it in the magazine, and nobody was caring because just a bunch of farmers in the Midwest, and who really cares? And now all of a sudden, it's a big deal. And now people in South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa are starting to wake up to this, and there's political agitation going on. It's being brought to the attention of governors, starting to make the national news. So time and again, we're ahead of the curve. And I think we sort of explain why, you know, following the lead, swimming in the wake of Mr. Welch, who's the founder of the John Birch Society, we've learned to kind of to be careful students of history, to keep our eye on current events, and above all, to understand that many of these things are not happening by accident. They're being done deliberately. So we know all of these things. But now the point is, and we're often accused of being negative Nellies, you know, of being Cassandras who can do nothing but talk about negative stuff and so forth. Why is it worthwhile? Gentlemen, I'm just open discussion. Why is it worthwhile even knowing these things? What can we do about it? How does it benefit us?
It's worth knowing because we can take the knowledge that we do have in order to be able to do something about it. And of course, the reason we were able to project the line so successfully is because we recognize that there is an organized plan, there is a conspiracy, and that this cabal is working for the destruction of America. Knowing that should give us hope, because it tells us that this is not something that is inevitable. It's not something that is by happenstance. It's not some kind of movement of the laws of physics that we can't control. Obviously, there are people who are making decisions that are bringing about the decline of America. And knowing that, we can shine the light of exposures on those things in order to change the policies, in order to save our country.
And Robert Welch, the reason why he knows most of, or knew most of this stuff, was that he was that student of history. You know, I mean, the gentleman started reading at age 2, I believe, and then by, was it age 9 that he read all of Ridpath's History of the World, a 9-volume set. And all of this knowledge kept with him throughout the years. And of course, you know, being involved in the business of manufacturing, candy manufacturing, you know, throughout his life, brought him into context with contact with a lot of other folks that were out there, business owners, managers, professional folks, all, you know, pointing to the fact that there is something definitely wrong or with the trajectory of society. And he pointed that out time and time again in something that he called "Look at the Score." You know, with the fact that, you know, after World War II, suddenly didn't we win? But yet all of this communism is popping up all over the place. You know, and he had a map that showed all of that. It was very, very popular. But knowing all of that and watching the trajectory of where things were going, he took, many trips, at least one trip around the world, where he had many different visits with heads of state. And, you know, got an opportunity to talk to, Chiang Kai-shek, and others. And it was just fascinating to learn of, you know, of some of the stuff that he went through. But all of this just points to the fact that when you're a student of history, you can actually, as you know, Steve pointed out before, you can project those, you know, plot the points basically and project those lines off into the future. So knowing for sure that, you know, that there's nothing new under the sun, as the Bible says, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is how things are cyclical is because of what the control out there is, whether it's education, control of facts and figures through media, through censorship, and so on and so forth. These are ideas that get, you know, promulgated throughout time. And what's pushing those ideas, you know? So I would think that most conservatives are like, government will leave me alone if I leave it alone, okay? But yet that's not the case, because when you have others that are out there that are part of this conspiracy, groups and elites that are out there pushing this, they have a particular agenda that they push, right? And so they're constantly working this agenda through all different levels, you know, of their influence throughout the world. And so it's there has to be some sort of organization that goes up against them in order to stop it. And that's exactly what Robert Welch did in 1958.
Right. Now, could I just interject something?
Yeah.
You know, people who know about the John Birch Society, particularly those who have an adversarial point of view, they'll always say, well, Robert Welch, who was he? He was a conspiracy theorist or something like this. They'll smear his name. Well, let me just tell our viewers, if anyone watches the show, you don't know who we're talking about. We say Robert Welch. Robert Welch was a child prodigy. He was homeschooled by his mother, who was a professional teacher who recognized his unique intellectual abilities. He enrolled in university at the age of 12, the University of North Carolina, one of the oldest universities in the United States. He graduated in the age of 16, and he followed that up by enrolling in Harvard Law School. He did not finish a law degree because, frankly, he found the liberalism to be stifling and off-putting and thought he could accomplish far more by going into business for himself, and so he got into the candy business. He became very successful. He was a man of very keen intellect. He had a large number of very well-known influential friends in the American manufacturing, in the entertainment industry. He wasn't some guy that just showed up with some half-baked idea about UFOs or anything like that. And yet, to hear the caricatures of the John Birch Society in general and Robert Welch, you would think that that was what he was like. But Robert Welch is a man of pretty much, I would say, of an intellect certainly equivalent to the founding fathers, a man of that stature. And it's fitting that he founded this organization. Mm. He was
not a professional historian. He didn't have a PhD in history, but he probably had read more books in his formative years about history than most history PhDs have done. So I just wanted to interject that. I also wanted to say that when I first got involved with the John Birch Society almost 30 years ago, this term conspiracy theory was still a kind of a hiss and a byword. In fact, they even did a movie about that in the 1990s where they featured our magazine as one of the props. It was a Mel Gibson film, largely forgotten today. But back in the 90s, as recent as the 90s, things like black helicopters and weather modification, all chemtrails and that stuff, were viewed as just absurd. And we don't necessarily endorse those things, but that's how people were all portrayed in the mainstream press.
Yeah, but we debunked a lot of that stuff.
Look at what we have today. We mentioned the fact that we use this term, the deep state. Mm. The deep state is basically what we used to call the insiders. And we still do occasionally use that term, or the globalists. But now people on the so-called right and left alike, lots of them, like Tucker Carlson, for example, to just cite one example, are very comfortable with the idea. Yeah, this is being done deliberately. Yeah, these aren't just accidental things that are happening. It's part of a plan. And I would add to that that it is the nature of evil to combine, to form conspiracies and secret combinations, because otherwise it can never achieve its aims. This goes to, and you mentioned the history. Anyone who studied Roman history knows of the conspiracy of Catiline, in which Julius Caesar, a young Julius Caesar, was probably a participant. So the rise of Caesarism in Rome was directly attributable to the political conspiracy of Catiline, and later the emperors themselves were all involved in this cult called the cult of Mithraism, which was the great early adversary of Christianity and so forth and so on, that was literally the cult of the empire. So cults and secret societies and occultism and all this stuff always go hand in hand with the movement toward power, the power of the Caesars. And that's really what we're talking about. But a lot of people just can't get their minds about it. Now comes the question. I mean, obviously, a major purpose of the John Birch Society in general and the New American Magazine, including the show in particular, is to educate people. But as we like to say, our objective is not just to be the best educated person in the concentration camp, like Benjamin the Donkey, and for those of you that have read the novel Animal Farm, the other George Orwell novel. So Benjamin the Donkey is a guy who knows what's going on from the beginning, but he never does anything about it until it's too late. Okay, yeah. So how can we avoid being like Benjamin the Donkey? How can we, what can we do? Is it, we're about to do an issue in the New American, a kind of a special issue where we're going to talk about this. Is it too late to do anything? Yeah. And of course, we say it isn't. So what can we do to turn this thing around? I'd like to spend a fair amount of time talking about that.
Well, in a previous conversation that Gary and I had I think it was Beyond the Cover. Mm-hmm. One thing that we pointed out was that, in regards to education, there has to be action that's associated with it. And so this is something that the founding fathers knew as well as students of history, knowing that, ideas won't carry themselves, but you have to have men, people, humans to, move this forward. And so, they undertook that when they had the movement for independence. It's not like, they automatically just decided, hey, we're having some trouble here with the king, and we're going to just declare ourselves independent and be done with it, right? No, it took 15 years at least to coalesce the ideas and to have that basically spread throughout the colonies in order to gain that support of the people. And it wouldn't have happened any other way if people wouldn't have come forward as the founding fathers did and said, we need to do something and this is what we're going to do.
Of course, without the education bill, it's very likely, in fact, I would say it would have been inevitable, that the American Revolution could have taken a very different direction.
Absolutely.
That it could have been much more like the French Revolution than what actually occurred in America. And of course, with the French Revolution, you had blood flowing in the streets, so you had the guillotine, you had the Reign of Terror. People simply went mad. There was fanaticism. Mm-hmm. Because they did not have the education.
There you go.
And so the education is vital. And of course, in our country today, despite the attacks on our freedoms, despite the erosion of our liberties, We still have the means to use the freedoms that we have to save our freedoms. And so, you know, no one's saying, okay, let's get out into the streets. That's not what we want. Right. I believe that would be counterproductive, and I know you gentlemen believe that as well. But what we are saying is it is not too late. And of course, one of the reasons why we know it is not too late is because if it were too late, the conspirators against God and man would simply clamp down totally. Would they not? They would just declare a national martial law, and they would stop pretending. They would stop hiding their sinister objectives. And we would immediately get the boot stamping on the human face forever. It was described by George Orwell in his dystopian novel, 1984.
That's right.
So it's not too late, but eventually we will lose all of our freedoms and we will have that despotism if we don't get involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, you know, as I pointed out before, I mean, in order for these things to fight back, I guess, mm-hmm. all right, you have to have an organization that has a counter agenda, you know, to help, you know, stop what's being, you know, promulgated on the not just the American people, but also, you know, the world in as a, in whole, I guess. And, you know, we see movements, you know, with the globalists and other elitists, those that are in you know, the top of some of these, you know, big corporations, working together in order to, you know, have regional governments come together. The European Union is a classic example of that. Mm-hmm. And when you see what they've been able to accomplish, according to, you know, their agenda for that, it is the model that is set up for the rest of the world to emulate. And so we see these unions that have come about through whether it's trade agreements, economic / political partnerships, you know, whatever. These kinds of things that are being, you know, pushed time and time again, even to the fact of having the NAFTA and now the USMCA actually pushing a North American Union on, you know, the three countries here. So there has to be that organization. And of course, you know, the John Birch Society has been doing this, again, as Steve said, since 1958. So we want to be able to have people, you know, come to the organization, learn more, and then to take that education, teach others, and then create the pressure that's needed in order for elected officials to do what's right according to the Constitution.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board. And I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack. And because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Bonta, and with me are Gary Benoit and Bill Hahn. We're talking about, well, I mean, we started out talking about the way that we have so successfully predicted things that will happen. Now, many of these have been negative things, unfortunately. And as we were Gary and Bill, you were having a pretty sustained discussion of some of the things toward the end of the last segment. And I was thinking that, you know, it's axiomatic, unfortunately, that it's much easier to destroy than create. And Bill, you mentioned that, you know, for at least 15 years before the American Revolution, there had been these things had been going on that had been preparing, you know, organizationally and educationally for what happened next. But, you know, I would submit that it probably was a lot longer than that, because if you look, the struggle for freedom that we're part of literally goes back millennia. And we can trace its earliest beginnings to the struggles of ancient Israel in the desert of Sinai.
That's true.
And, of course, to the ancient Greek city-states, particularly in Athens, not to mention the Roman Republic that was their successor power. Mm-hmm. And then a pretty significant series of republics, mostly in the Italian peninsula area of Europe, during the Middle Ages, some of which were quite successful and others of which were not. And then, of course, eventually the foundation of the state of England and the way it evolved slowly, the Anglo-Saxon, presumably Anglo-Saxon-based common law that evolved into something. You know, all these different strands that came together and coalesced and others that we could mention. We don't have time to do that. But you know, I mean, there's a lot of history there, a lot of precedent. Certainly, you know, the Glorious Revolution in 1688 in England, almmost a century before exactly a century before the founding of the United States, was a major precursor as well. And the English Bill of Rights that came out of that, mm-hmm. much of which was pretty much cribbed directly into our own Bill of Rights. So there was all this preparation, and this in the face of resolute resistance throughout the ages. And sometimes there were setbacks, very serious setbacks, to be sure. But the thing is, you know, if I'm Rodin, it might take me months to fashion a beautiful sculpture, but a vandal with a sledgehammer can destroy it in a few minutes. And that's the problem that we face. I remember once I was in the apartment of someone I'm related to who was a very ardent leftist, and there was a poster on the wall that said, "Governments don't fall by themselves. They need your help." And it was sort of a hoarded to a leftist call to tolerance. That's really true. But the thing is, those who are beavering away at the foundations of the American Republic, who are trying to shred the Constitution, who are trying to destroy root and branch, every aspect of Judeo-Christian civilization that has been the foundational kind of the soil in which our republic has grown up, it's for them a comparatively easy task. All they need to do is destroy it, and it's done, and it's gone. The work of ages is being undone before our eyes. And our task is not to create something entirely new. I mean, that we're not innovators. What we want to do is to preserve and to some extent, you know, to bring back what has been lost.
I would say restore, a restoration.
Yeah, to restore, sure, a restoration. So I just want to get into this a little bit more. I mean, this is, we shouldn't deceive ourselves or our listeners. This is an easy task, but it is a doable task. If you look at human history, far greater obstacles have been overcome throughout the ages by people and over longer periods of time. It took the Spanish, for example, 700 years to fight off the Muslim invaders and to, you know, reestablish Catholic Christianity in Spain. So that was a tremendous labor. And I have no doubt that, you know, your average Spanish, you know, knight of Alcantara or whatever in 1300 AD or 1200 AD may have thought, boy, this is never going to happen. Maybe it'll be another 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the task seems impossible.
And of course,
but
without
we know
that
it's
happening,
not.
Europe would have become Islamic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if we look at history, we see many other examples, and we shouldn't say to ourselves, oh, you know, woe is us. There's no mm-hmm. way we can do right. this. It's all lost. And yet, so how, what do you anticipate lies ahead in this struggle? I mean, what's the point of being predicting the bad things that are going to happen if they just then happen and we show ourselves to be helpless? Or are we helpless?
The point is, because if you look down the road as to where we're going, you can actually do something about it in order to change the direction. And you pointed out, Steve, that the predictions are negative. And yes, that is true. The predictions have been negative. But can you imagine the world today without the John Birch Society? Can you imagine what would have happened if Robert Welch did not create this wonderful organization? If countless tens of thousands of members had not become involved in this crusade? And I firmly believe if it weren't for those things, that we'd be living in slavery today. So that is one way of looking at it, is that the John Birch Society already has achieved the tremendous accomplishment of buying our republic time, of buying the American people time, so that we can still use our freedoms to save our freedoms.
Yeah, the Romans had no such thing. And when the
right.
Republic, I mean, they had the odd Cicero and Cato the Younger, you know, Cassius and so forth, who represented the old Republic, but they were primarily, except when they got together to kill Julius Caesar, mm-hmm. other than that one dramatic event, they didn't have any coherent
right.
plan. And so as a result, when the proscriptions were ordered by the Second Triumvirate, they all got killed, including Cicero, were assassinated separately, and that was the end of things.
And of course, the killing of Cicero is really significant because a lot of historians, and perhaps yourself, Steve, consider the death of the Roman Republic and the birth of the empire. They mark that by the death of Cicero. But the thing to remember is that Cicero was just one person. He was just one man. And imagine if there were a John Birch Society in Rome.
Yes. It beggars the imagination, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. What do you think, Bill?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you know, there's also a I don't know if I can find it here real quick, but there's a gentleman when Cuba was taken over. I'll read it right here. It says this is Pedro Diaz Lanz, former head of Cuba's Air Force under Fidel Castro, and he became a member of the John Birch Society and a speaker for our Speakers Bureau. But he said, if there had been even one chapter of the John Birch Society in Havana prior to 1959, working to expose Castro, as Robert Welch was at the time, Cuba would not have fallen to communism. Okay? That gives you an idea of the power of organization, of using that education through action in order to help build that organization, to help restore, you know, what was put in place. And that's one big key thing, too, is that we're not reinventing the wheel here. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the founding fathers, they were standing on the shoulders of those that came before them. You mentioned, a number of those folks, or a number of the major historical events that had happened that they learned about and applied actually in the building of the Republic. All the different types of principles that went into that for freedom, liberties, the God-given rights, how to protect, those things. And the major function of government now, but what was supposed to have been the major goal back then was the whole protecting of our God-given rights and allowing the free exercise of those rights as kind of a balance. You get too much government and those rights are stifled, and not enough government and those rights are not protected. So, the founding fathers, what they gave us is still there. We've managed not to screw it up to a certain degree of watering it down to nothing, like many constitutions around the world. Those things are worth nothing more than the piece of paper that they're written on. But what makes it worth so much more here is that we, as the citizens of the country, as the electorate, understand those principles and actually put it into action. That's where where that comes from. The minute or the time that we pull back from that and we say, yeah, you know what, that's not for me. I'm not going to be involved in politics, right? That's a problem, because the founding fathers wanted every one of us to be part of that process in order to help hold our elected officials accountable. It doesn't work without our participation.
Yes, and a lot of people will object. They'll say, I'm too busy for that. Or they'll say, you people are so negative. I don't want to get involved. Politics is just, ugh. I'd rather do positive things and uplifting. Well, granted, there are many wonderful uplifting things in life that we'd all like to do. But it is our moral duty as citizens, not subjects of a republic, not an empire or a dictatorship, to be involved. And yes, it sometimes involves doing things that are a little distasteful, advocating for a cause, being concerned with or informing ourselves about some evil. I mean, we were talking about the movie Sound of Freedom that Gary and I saw the other night. And boy, oh boy, what an unpleasant topic.
That was inspiring, despite the fact it dealt with such an evil evil industry.
Yes, and it was inspiring. But the solution to a problem like that is not to pretend that it doesn't exist. Mm. Mm-hmm. So this is the reality. We need to buckle up, or I guess the expression actually is buckle up.
Yeah, buckle down.
Buckle. Yeah. So anyway, we need to buck up and lift up our chins as a people and demonstrate the kind of resolve and courage and willingness to confront and face evil that our founding fathers and quite a number of other succeeding generations of Americans had, and not be seduced by all of the pleasures of the world and the thing, you know, the entertainment, all the other things that can be such a distraction if they're indulged in too much of an excess.
And those pleasures are going to disappear if we don't do something.
They sure are.
If we don't do more to save our freedoms. And I remember many years ago, a gentleman by the name of Vilius Virginus, he's now deceased, but he was somebody who came from Lithuania. And so he saw communism firsthand, as well as Nazism. He became an American citizen, went on a speaker's tour. In fact, went on many speaker's tours for the John Birch Society. But I remember this story that he told in his speeches, and he described this this woman that he observed who was in this this park in Lithuania. And she was with her child in the park, and the child was playing with marbles or playing with pebbles. But as that was happening, the woman, an adult, knew that the totalitarians were coming, that the communists were coming, and their lives would just be torn to pieces. But the child was oblivious and did not know. So Vilius told that story very, very powerfully, and then he made the observation that's what's happening with adults in America today. That they're playing with pebbles, they're playing with marbles, they're playing with their boats or fishing or their sports or their entertainments, the internet, computer games. They're playing with all these things, and there's nothing wrong per se with entertainment. Obviously, we need some entertainment, but the point is we can't spend too much time in entertainment. We got to also put first things first. And putting first things first means putting first God, family, and country. And that means stopping this diabolical conspiracy. And maybe fighting this conspiracy is a negative, but the positive is preserving for future generations this legacy of freedom that we have inherited from our founding fathers.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a really good note to end this section on. And when we come back, we're going to focus a little more on the positives and our vision, our positive vision for the future ahead. Stay tuned.
As a lumberjack, I've been cutting wood for decades. My job is pretty straightforward. I see the wood, I chop the wood. My axe goes through every time. You remember when everyone bought all the toilet paper? And they wanted me to wear these things? And someone invested a lot of money into this stuff. They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot, it's too cold. You know what? The weather changes. We even hear crazy ideas on how kids should learn.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
Visit thenewamerican.com and subscribe to get 50% off the cover price. And if you want an even better deal, use the promo code 10OFFSUB. Again, that's 10OFFSUB for more than 50% off.
Well, welcome back, everybody, for our final portion of this discussion. You know, I thought, you know, for all of the dire warnings, and we are in the business of dire warnings. That's been the case. We've been a voice of warning from the beginning, and that's unescapable. Some people are going to find that just too negative, and that's unfortunate. But there's also a positive side to all of this that bears some discussion that I think, you know, in the end outweighs everything. Positive point number one, we all know who wins this thing in the long run. It's right. Primarily the road that we're going to follow to get there.
We've read the back of the book, right?
Yeah. So there's that. So we'll put that out there and remind people that. The thing is that if we're talking, and of course we're talking about the matter of eternal salvation and the triumph of the kingdom of heaven and all of those types of things. However, I don't think we should delude ourselves into thinking, well, I just sit back and I have my faith and my belief and God's going to come down and take care of everything, and it'll be okay. That's not my version of true religion. My version says, you know, that God helps those who help themselves, that we have to do everything we can to save our country, to bring about the outcome that we're all hoping for, which is to save our freedom and our Constitution, our Republic, And then God will step in and wherever needed, perhaps. Okay. But, you know, more than that, we've talked about the negative things we predicted and that have come to pass. And we could greatly multiply the examples we gave in an earlier section of this show. No question about that. But at the same time, in the last 30 years or so that I've really been involved in the freedom movement, you know, there's been a sea change in a lot of ways. There has been a feeling that if we haven't yet maybe turned the ship around, it's starting to do that. There's a course correction underway. And everyone who's been in a large ship or any large vehicle knows, you know, that you can't turn it on a dime. You can't say, we're heading towards that iceberg. Whew, let's do a 180 and get out of here. Doesn't work that way, as the passengers of the Titanic found out long ago. It takes a long time. So the evidence, I think, is very persuasive that things are afoot. And I think a large part of the reason is the influence that we have exerted over the years that have brought this to such a strait. A year ago, for example, the Dobbs decision accomplished something that I frankly never thought I would see in my lifetime, which is...
And you weren't alone.
Yeah, a lot of us felt this way. Mm-hmm. We thought that, you know, Roe v. Wade was never going to be overturned, that institutionalized infanticide, which is, you know, deceptively called abortion by those who support it, was always going to be a feature of American life. And to be sure, there's still a long way to go on that front, but at least now it's being fought at the state level,
right?
Which
plus
is where it ought to be fought.
The number of abortions have been radically reduced.
Absolutely,
that's
absolutely.
Right.
So that's one example. But there are many others, you know, that we could adduce. For example, back in
2016.
Oh sure, what 2016?
You know, two big things happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
President Trump being elected, and then of course Brexit.
Sure, Brexit, you know? Which is, you know, they're doing their best to nullify that over.
Right.
And the latest thing is they've actually, I heard they've canceled Nigel Farage, the guy who led
yes.
He's had all of his bank accounts canceled.
Yeah.
So he's finding that the battle in Europe is rough going too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the thing, people. The enemies of freedom, not only do they never sleep, their zeal is undiminished.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who are on the side of liberty, you know, we like to enjoy our lives. It's easy for us to be distracted. The people who are arrayed against us are hardcore ideologues. They never take a break. And as someone who's lived in a communist country, who's witnessed firsthand how communism works when it actually becomes fully instantiated as a political system, the first thing you notice is they have no sense of humor. They don't. Everything they do has to be structured around the goal of supporting the state and supporting the state ideology. You know, you never let your hair down. A true communist never lets his hair down. So these people are deadly serious. Okay. Whereas on our side, you know, as I say, it is. We like to have our 4th of July picnics.
Yeah.
We like to enjoy life. Go fishing.
Let's
go hunting.
The woods.
You know,
right.
You're an avid woodsman and hunter. You know. So this is part of the issue. All right. But at the same time, you know, we have, I think, so much evidence accruing that we're changing course. And this is something that you don't see in the history of Rome. You don't see in the history of the Republic of Venice and all the other, you know, the handful of examples of really successful republics in the past that ended up succumbing to the siren song of empire or being conquered from without, as happened with Venice. Okay, they were conquered by Napoleon and that was the end of them. Okay, so, but here we're seeing this tremendous sea change. Back in the 1990s, 30 years ago, so-called constitutional carry was almost unknown. I believe there were two states, maybe Alaska and Vermont, where circa 1995, you could actually carry a firearm. There were essentially no state firearm laws, and they were fully compliant with the Second Amendment. Today, it's what, half of the states or more?
Yeah, if not more.
And in spite of all the constant, you know, incessant drumbeat in the press, I mean, this is a big deal with them. Every time there's a mass shooting, we've got to confiscate guns. We've got to put in place common sense gun control laws. It just isn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and if nothing, the gun culture has grown. And that's a big part of why America remains free. You know, they don't have gun culture in Europe. They don't have a gun culture in most of Latin America, certainly not in Asia. So, or if they do, it's like a bunch of gorillas in the jungle and they're not interested in preserving, you know, Second Amendment rights, right? So there's a lot of evidence. And the other thing, and I want to discuss this, Gary, in particular, you know, we've talked about this and written about this over the years in The New American. One of the things that makes America so unique is what we like to call layers of strength. It's turned out to not be such an easy task as just putting a mallet to a statue destroying the American Republic.
Well, of course, they're doing that, too. They are tearing down
They're literally trying to do that, yes.
No question about that.
Modern-day iconoclasts, right?
Absolutely. But, of course, you touched on one of those layers of strings when you mentioned guns.
Yep, that's certainly one.
That certainly is. The fact that so many people possess firearms. Mm-hmm. So that's a layer of strength. Another one would be local police departments that are beholden to local communities. The purpose of the police is to protect and serve the people of those communities. It's not to carry out the dictates of the central government in Washington, D.C. And so that's another layer of strength that we're seeing being attacked, but it has not been destroyed. And of course, another, I would say, would be our long tradition of freedom. Let's look at when the communists, for example, took over in Russia. That was a sudden, overt revolution. That would not have been possible in the United States of America. And so they've had to try to attack this country through patient gradualism. Mm-hmm. And it's taken generations.
Well, and of course, the so-called cultural Marxist, that's not mm-hmm. just some term. That's a real thing. It was pretty much invented simultaneously by an Italian theorist named Antonio Gramsci mm-hmm. and a bunch of people in Frankfurt, who now are called the Frankfurt School. Mm-hmm. And many of the so these two groups kind of independently concluded that the old Marxist program of simply, you know, persuading the working classes to rise up in a violent revolution wouldn't work in Western countries, because unlike Russia and China and other places that have succumbed, you know, to communism, in the West you had these layers of cultural resilience. And so even the poor people in Western European countries say, well, yeah, you know, okay, I wish I had more money, and yeah, the rich people are probably, but I'm not really, you know, I've got, my life's pretty good. I'm not going mm-hmm. to rise up and overthrow the government just because of some, you know, some ideologue. And, you know, this comes with education and other things. What do you think, Bill?
Oh, I think that probably one of the greatest layers of strength is the American system itself. Mm-hmm. The American exceptionalism, as the founding mm-hmm. fathers set up. The very fact of the matter, you know, that we have governments that are here to, you know, protect our God-given rights, as we declare in the Declaration of Independence, which many people just seem to turn a blind eye to nowadays. But, you know, the philosophical, you know, underpinnings are there. And then, of course, the Constitution is what applies, you know, those to the government, as far as the constitutional limitations. You know, that government is, as the Founding Fathers saw it, it is a negative force to be controlled, okay? It's not a positive force to do something for people. You know, the American people are to be, you know, more of a self-resilient, self-reliant type of individual that has morals, that basically have the ability to self-govern themselves, and they don't need a lot of government in order to, you know, help to, you know, live their lives. And so government is a negative force to be kind of kept at the, you know, at the side, kept off, you know, of the freedoms of the American people. But that system is still intact. You know, we still have the republic. We still have 50 state republics.
We still have the Constitution in spite of decades of neglect and abuse.
Absolutely.
It has a lot to do with the John Birch Society because of our campaign to stop a modern-day constitutional convention.
That's right.
If that were to occur, there's no telling what would happen.
That's right.
Now, Bill, I know time's getting short, but you're at the helm of the John Birch Society. And what thoughts do you have about what the John Birch Society is accomplishing to make a difference and ultimately save our freedoms and restore our republic to an even brighter luster?
Well, you know, Mr. Welch had talked about, you know, you have to have a vision that's brighter than the nightmare that we're trying to overcome.
Right.
Okay. And that vision, I think, is different for each American. It's like the American dream, right? As has been pushed out through the years, but again, you talked about God, family, country. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, I think the American part of the concept of the American dream for many, and I think that the future is very bright when it comes to, you know, what we're going to be looking at from the actions of the John Birch Society. You know, when you have a number of folks that are concertedly working on one particular agenda, huge things can happen. And we have seen this, you know, you talked about the last 30 years, Steve. I've only been here for 16 years. And it is phenomenal to see the amount of influence and impact that the members of the John Birch Society have been able to undertake and overcome and achieve within the last, you know, like I said, 16 years.
Often unheralded, usually unheralded.
Absolutely, yeah.
Our way is not the ostentatious way. Right,
right, right.
We don't seek the limelight.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's interesting, for example, circa about 1998 or 1999, we started a campaign, Get Us Out of the FTAA.
And
nobody,
we did.
Nobody knows what the FTA is today. Why is that?
Yeah.
Because circa 2005, we the won. FTA, which is an early attempt to create an American equivalent to the European Union, including South America, it fell apart and was gone. And we don't know the extent to which our campaign influenced that. But, you know, I mean,
well,
I just
want to say, we were one of the few, or if not the only one, working on it at the time.
We were. You and know. So I think there has to be a connection, right? But it's not our way to be attention grabbers and to lead great movements. I mean, you know, people who want to be center of the attention, probably we're not right for you.
But for everybody else, that you know, we'd love to have them come to the John Birch Society and be members. So come to gbs.org and take a look at us.
Absolutely. And I was just to say, you know, I mean, this is bigger than us. We're in the business of saving not just our republic, but our civilization.
Absolutely.
That's no exaggeration. That's a subject for another day. Thank you so much, Gary Benoit and Bill Hahn. It's been wonderful. That's all for today, folks. For more truth behind the news, make sure to get a subscription to the New American Magazine. Oh, and by the way, join the John Birch Society, too. You can do so online at thenewamerican.com or by calling our office at 800-727-3783, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 Central Time. Thank you again for joining us today. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.